Hey, everybody. Before we get into the show, we have a major, earth-shattering, massive announcement. Nikki?
Yes, it is that time again, Pete Wright. Our monthly planning membership is open for enrollment. GPS stands for Guided Planning Sessions, if you don't know already. We've worked really hard here at Take Control ADHD to provide you with a service that not only gives you ideas and strategies on how to plan your day and your week, but it also provides time and space for you to do the work and not just by yourself, but with others who understand and support you. We meet every Monday and Thursday, and there are three different sessions for each day that you're invited to attend. We are dedicated to making this membership to be one that is transformative in the way you think about planning and taking control of your time and schedule. There are so many benefits to the GPS membership, so please be sure to visit our website at takecontroladhd.com/GPS. Enrollment is open now through May 8th. Thank you for your time and attention, and I hope to see you soon.
On with the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Taking Control, the ADHD podcast on True Story FM. I'm Pete Wright, and right over there is Nikki Kintzer.
After I take a drink of my coffee. Hello, everyone. Welcome.
We've learned nothing about podcasting. Don't drink on your line.
The timing is off here for me already this morning. Oh, well. Okay. I'm back on target.
We are continuing our job series, and this week we're sort of inserting an episode because we were so deeply inspired by our members-only happy hour that happened at the beginning of this very month. What month are we in? It was May. The May happy hour was just last week. So as we record this, so by the time you hear this, some weeks will have passed. But we started talking about red flags about halfway through this conversation, our happy hour conversation, and people had red flags at work. And I kept thinking, red flags at morning, employees are something. Red flags at night, workers' delight. No, there's a sea shanty or something. It's about red skies and things. I was trying to come up with some sort of a pirate metaphor all morning. I've been trying to. It never worked. Anyway, people had thoughts about red flags, things they experienced and maybe should have seen in the rear view, had they only known better, et cetera. We have lots of great examples. So we're going to talk a little bit about our own red flags and red flags, way to see some red flags and maybe some signals that you should keep in your back pocket so you know when you should be even looking for red flags. So that's what we're going to talk about today. We have a couple of big announcements. First of all, you know where to find us, takecontroladhd.com, and jump into the Discord server, takecontroladhd.com/Discord. It's a fantastic place with a growing, enthusiastic community of members all living with ADHD, supporting one another. It is the greatest, greatest, greatest place on the internet. And of course, if you really love it and you want to see all the super double triple secret channels that you don't get access to in the public, then you should visit Patreon, patreon.com/theADHDpodcast. That's our member support program. If you want to support what we do here, if you want to see it continue to grow and thrive, toss us a few bucks a month over at Patreon, and that will help a lot and get you access to early episodes of the podcast with extra stuff and the access to all the super triple secret channels in Discord. It's really, really great. So we appreciate you doing that. Thank you so, so much. And now we do have a couple of announcements for all.
Yes, we have some summer events that are happening. So I want to make sure everyone knows that we still have a few days left to sign up for the next installment of the ADHD Book Club. I am so excited to be exploring James Ochoa's book. As you all know, James has been a guest here eight times. Wow. Good friend of the show. And his book, Focus Forward, Navigating the Storms of Adult ADHD, is the book that we are going to be exploring. And he has graciously committed to joining us in two of our sessions. It's an 8-week book club. So I would love to have you join me. I have this book. I've read this book. I love this book. I give it to clients. And I am really excited about sharing this book with a group of people that we can really sit and talk about it and really understand what James work, what his work is all about.
Yeah,
so important. For sure. So the deadline is to enroll is May 31st. We also have another deadline on May 31st.
The deadlines are stacking up right now.
They are. Declutter Challenge is happening this summer, June 2023. And I am really excited to get this challenge started. If you've been a longtime listener of the show, you know that my garage has been a toleration for me far too long. And that is my main focus in June of 2023. My goal is to get this garage in some kind of order, not perfection, but some kind of order. So I want you to come with me along on this journey. We have a game we're going to play. I have a couple of webinars that I'm going to share with you on how to organize, how to get started, and then how to maintain. And we also have work sessions that we're going to be doing on Saturdays in June too. So lots of great things. You can find both of these events on our website, takecontroladhd.com/bookclub for the book club, takecontroladhd.com/declutter if you'd like to declutter.
You should totally declutter. Everyone should declutter, yes. But also book club. It's going to be a fun, fun June Take Control. So,
absolutely.
This week's episode is brought to you by Text Expander, one of the best invisible tools in my tech tool chest. Here's how it works. If there's a piece of text that I type more than once, that's a signal I need to add it to Text Expander. So I keep my most used emails, phrases, text messages, URLs, and so much more right in my Text Expander library. A snippet can include text, links, images, code, account numbers, phone numbers, addresses, whatever you want. The trick is, for each one of those snippets in my library, I assign a unique abbreviation. Then I expand it. I can deploy the current text that I need with just a few keystrokes on any device across any apps I use. Just type the abbreviation for the snippet I'm looking for and boom, text expanded. You can even get your whole team or family access to all the content they need to use every single day. Organize it by department and group and make sure that all of your snippets are used consistently wherever they're needed. This month, we're talking about red flags at work, and I've got to tell you, one of the red flags, if you're dealing with this just like I do, Text Expander might be able to help. It's the frequent little typographical mistakes. My brain, it just moves too fast to catch little errors when I'm typing quickly, and we're talking about things like brand names and technical terms, things that are unique to my business that don't usually get caught by spell check. So I put these terms in my Text Expander library, and then I never miss them. Example, live stream. We do a live stream on this show, and for a long time, live stream was accepted as a single word. But now, more and more, it is two words. It's split up, live and stream. Well, I still type it as live stream. Spell check doesn't catch it, so I added it to Text Expander, and now every time I type the word live stream, it separates it to live and stream, and I don't have to do anything. It just fixes the issue instantly, automatically, and effortlessly. Text Expander is available on Mac, Windows, Chrome, iPhone, and iPad. And for listeners of the ADHD podcast, you can get 20% off your first year of service. All you have to do is visit takecontroladhd.com/textexpander, and you'll be whisked over to our page on their site where you can get started. Again, get started now. You'll save 20% off your subscription. TakeControlADHD.com/TextExpander. The way we work is changing rapidly. Make work work the way your brain works by saying more in less time with less effort using Text Expander. Our great thanks to the Text Expander team for sponsoring the ADHD podcast. We do have an answer from the ADHD community. I neglected to mention, if you become a member at patreon.com/theADHDpodcast, you get to join us for the live chat of the live show and watch us record live. And Casey does report red flags in the morning. That's your warning. Red flags at night. Quit now. Don't even show up the next morning, which is probably closer to the truth than any of us want to admit. We are talking about red flags.
Right.
Where would you like to start with this conversation on red flags?
Well, it looks like Melissa, our lovely Brain Trust partner wants us to start with our own past job stories.
Well, that was me. I actually wanted to do that. I added this first little section on top of Melissa's stuff because I want to hear your red flags, because you have worked for a long time. And, you know, even though you and I have been doing this for working for ourselves thing for a while, we have company experience. Do you have any experience with red flags yourself? Because I do.
You know, I've been pretty lucky. I've worked for some pretty good people. I think the red flags, it hasn't so much been like the companies that I've worked for, the people that I've worked for. It's been the type of jobs. Like, I've really kind of figured out what I wanted, what I was good at, what I wanted to do, and what I didn't want to do. Yeah. And I think that was the biggest thing is the sales. I'm not a good salesperson. Mm-hmm. I didn't like being a salesperson. And I did that for a temporary service. And I did it for a very short period of time. And I got lucky and I got a really big client. And but you only get those clients for like a short period of time where you still get commission on them. And mm-hmm. then like you have to go find new business. That's mm-hmm. the thing about sales is you can't just Terrible. Ride your current business. Right. You're supposed to go find new business. And I did not like the cold calling, the calling on, because this was back in the 90s. So, I mean, that's really aging me. Yeah, it was. It was back in the like mid to late 90s. And everything was different. I mean, it was actually picking up a phone call or a phone, a real phone mm-hmm. in your office
and with
calling
a
bunch of companies. Right. Yeah. And then having the map, not a GPS, an actual map in your car to try to figure out where you were going.
That's the Thomas Guide. Do you remember the Thomas Guide? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That job was not for me. Yeah. So that would be the thing that I would say is that I really just figured out more about what I didn't like and what I liked. And I actually, the last job I had with a company was human resources. And I really enjoyed that job. Yeah, I really did love it. And I loved the people I worked with and the company was great. And it was hard to leave.
It's funny, as I was thinking about this morning, I was going through what are the things that I've really struggled with in my sort of pre-ADHD career, like the stuff that I didn't know I should know about, the unknown unknowns, right? Mm-hmm. And I realized there are a few, like my first job that wasn't like a working in the tourist industry as a high schooler, right? I was working in a television station and it was cataloging old tapes. So I had to go through this vast library, this endless dark hallway that had 3/4-inch tapes, like news tapes, all up lining all the walls. And I had to go one by one, put them in the drive and log in this brand new computer system what the stories were at what time code on each of the tapes so that, you know, when you're filing new stories, you can go back to file footage very, very easily. So I was essentially a glorified video librarian doing a ton of data entry.
Right.
And I realized that was probably one of my best jobs for personality because I could get go over to the 7-Eleven next door and get a big gulp that was like a whoa gulp, like the size of my head and bigger.
Right.
And I could, hyper focus with my stimulant and do that for hours and hours and hours. And nobody ever bugged me. And they just knew that as long as they could go into the computer and find the stories that they wanted and that library was growing, they never questioned what I was doing. It was as soon as I had responsibilities and deadlines that I started struggling. Those were the things that got in the way. And I didn't know that there should be red flags that I should know about. The more And I was, you know, really, really good at lying to myself, at convincing myself that doing one thing was of value, even when I was asked to do a different thing. And so things like missing deadlines, I was constantly missing deadlines. And, you know, the news business is run on very tight schedules, right? It's very deadline oriented. And so I had to get a handle of that. I was making, you know, I would start making mistakes that I would be caught on multiple times, like misspellings, names, those kinds of things that I just wasn't paying attention to the detail. You know, when I got thrown, was I resilient enough? Did I have the sort of, was I able to recover and come back? What were the things my manager was calling me on in terms of, we know you're overloaded, but you're not catching up? Like, what do we got to do to catch up? And then, you know, the complete other side of that is dealing with and learning to live with a complete lack of feedback, right? Like, when I don't know if what I am doing is good or not. And those sort of make for a catalog of the things that I was struggling with before I realized I had ADHD.
And, yes, yeah.
And I realize only in hindsight now that I was being given a gift by having a manager that would talk to me about them, right? That would talk to me about them before, you know, repercussions occurred. Mm-hmm. And that was a big deal. I think now, had I had the systems that I have now, that I count on now, like a big visual tool to tell me, here are the deadlines, right? Like, if I had gone to the trouble of creating and using whiteboards and doing the kinds of things I do now, it would have been a different experience. If I had, you know, if I'd thought to ask, like, hey, producer, I need you to look at the work that I've done today and check me on my spellings and make sure, like, if I had called to account an accountability buddy, like, I would have done a different kind of job, a different level of quality, right? Those are the things that I think I was counting as red flags that I, you know, given with the gift of hindsight, know now, could have handled better and just didn't. So I don't know. Is that a fine way to set the table for our own red flags?
Yes, I think so.
Because I think, you know, from our conversation the other night, I feel like some of these things kind of bubble up to, you know, what other people were talking about. And I realized just how much I was able to relate to them.
Absolutely. Well, and what was so great about the happy hour conversation is it gave us this topic and it gave us our next topic too, that we're going to talk about eventually. But I love that we're talking about this because it's, when you're doing a job series, we will typically talk about what kinds of jobs are good for ADHD. How do you know, it's about the interview process. It's about all of this stuff, but it's not really about finding the right job for you in as much detail as we're going to be talking about, and really looking for those red flags, or at least being aware of them when they pop up. So I love the angle that we're doing here.
Yeah, me too. And it does start with the red flags that pop up before you get the job. And this is probably a good one to start with, just because, one, I know there are people in our community who are looking for work right now. And because of the economic conditions in which we live, there is an increased sense of weight and stress on finding the job and just saying yes to what comes. And so it's important to be aware of the red flags maybe before you jump to a yes, so that you can poke around and ask some more questions, right? The first one was an interesting one that came about talking about just when you're hunting for the job, and it was, you find a position and the position has been posted for a long time. Like, they are clearly struggling to fill this position. And, you know, we've got Melissa posted in our notes a quote from Monster.com, quote, "This may be a sign that the company has put the position on hold or has high turnover for reasons that might raise concern. And sometimes companies will collect resumes just for the sake of gathering information about current salary conditions." So I think both of those things are true. I think, having been on the inside trying to fill positions like this, it could also mean that the company is dysfunctional at a very core level, that they can't find someone who sticks. And it could just mean that it's high turnover because it's a bad job. And I think that's something to be aware of.
It's something to be aware of, and it's something to ask about.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk a little bit more about this when we talk about the interview, but that's a great question to ask when you're in the interview, is how long has the position been opened? Why is it opened? Like, is it a new position or is it a current position that you're trying to fill? And, you know, really asking those questions around this job and hearing what they have to say, because it is a key. Doesn't mean that it's a no-go for the job. I mean, but it's something, like you said, be aware of and ask questions about.
Yeah. Which leads to, like, what are the keywords that the job is actually selling. And one of the key words that we're looking for is competitive salary, right? Oh, this job offers a competitive salary. Competitive with what, right? They want you to think it's competitive with the market. Like it's competitive that with other positions that might be recruiting you on your very best day, but it could really be competitive with the bottom of the market. It could be competitive mm-hmm. with entry level. It could be competitive with, like, it ends up being competitive salary ends up being kind of nonsense words. Like, there's no number associated with it. And competitive salary doesn't take into account your specific offer as somebody who's willing to come and deliver their blood and sweat to the organization.
So this is interesting because I see both sides.
Sure.
Because I'm in HR.
Right.
I'm in HR. I see both sides. I see why you don't, as a company, you don't necessarily want to put the number out there because you don't want to sway people one way or the other. And you want people to apply who are interested in the job. But this is interesting. I was talking to a friend of mine who does hiring and now in Oregon in the current climate. And we were talking about this because I was asking her how much she was offering for a particular job that she was looking for to hire. And it's a high level job. And I said, so how does that work? And she said, well, in Oregon, you can't ask what their current salary is.
Right. Anymore. That's true.
And
that's true in
I was
a lot
like,
of
really?
States. A lot of
yeah,
states.
I didn't yeah. know that because when I was in HR, you could. You could yeah. say, what is your current salary?
Right.
And now you can't. And she said, well, they do that because they don't, they want they don't want to discriminate, mm-hmm. you know? So if a man comes in and he says, well, I was making $100,000, I want $100,000. A woman comes in and says, well, I was making $70,000.
Right.
I want $70,000, but they're doing the exact same job. The company shouldn't, I mean, it's unconscious
right.
bias, right?
Right.
or whatever. And so I never knew that. So I that was new to me. And so it is interesting. We should get an employment lawyer or somebody on the show because it would be really interesting to hear how companies do that. Like, how do they decide on their salaries? Because you could do a Google search,
mm-hmm. yeah.
but it doesn't necessarily tell you much because it's so broad.
Yeah. It might surprise you to learn. I also have an HR podcast called Human Solutions, a HR podcast for people who love HR. And I do it
since
with
when?
A regular.
I know this.
Yeah, I know. It's for AIM HR Solutions in Boston, Massachusetts. And Massachusetts has a really fascinating, is fascinatingly progressive in terms of the way it protects employees. And I am going to ask my employment lawyer, Tom Jones, to join us for this conversation because
yes.
it would
okay,
be
but I'm,
really useful.
My mind is blown. How did I not know that you had an HR podcast? How long have you been doing it?
We're in season 3, short seasons. Like we've only done probably 30 episodes over the last couple of
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
Well,
bring
I mean, you
Tom
know what
Jones
you know.
On.
You don't know about that. Like, I do 30 shows. Like, what, you have yeah. no business like keeping up with all the nonsense that I do. There's no expectation that you would know.
But that one, I would be really interested in.
Yeah, it's good. It is. It's really fascinating when you think about because so many of these conversations are your jurisdiction may be different depending on what state you're in. But generally, there are a lot of protections, more protections for employees than you know when you and I were actively studying HR now.
Right. Because, so. And that's what my friend was saying is she said, you know, back in the day, you kind of went off of whatever they wanted or what they offered if it was in the range.
Yeah.
But now it's like, this is what the job pays.
Yes.
It doesn't matter if you're a man, woman, or whatever gender you relate to. It doesn't matter. Like,
right.
this is just what the job pays. This is what we're offering.
Yes. And what's really yeah. interesting about it, like one of the things that it, and I don't know this, if this is specifically, you know, these two things are tied together, but one of the things that I note is that the salary ranges as a result have gotten much, much wider. We were just looking at a position that where the salary range started at $30,000 and went to $100,000. right?
Holy
for
cow, that's
the same job title. And part of the reason is they want to make sure that they have a lot of room to promote people to the top of a salary range that makes it exciting and enticing to stay in the role longer. And so I totally get that. And you want to come in and you want to be making the highest, but competitive salary could mean we're competitive with the 30,000 or we're competitive with 90.
Really, like you said, it really doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, doesn't mean anything.
Until you get information about the job.
Yep.
So yeah, that's interesting.
Yep.
All right, good to know.
Very interesting. Okay, so you wanted to talk about the interview.
Well, yes. Yeah, so I know that there's a couple different sides here. So there's red flags from our listeners that I want to share with you. Mm-hmm. When they've been in situations where I asked an interviewer, how do you like your job? And what do you think your biggest challenge is? And I was immediately met with defensiveness and asked something like, who's interviewing who here? Oh, big, huge red flag.
Yeah, huge. And that's, you know, I just want to add something to all of this, which is when you hear something like that, the red flag is it might not be saying anything about the company, but it is saying the person interviewing you is bad at their job, right?
Oh, for sure.
That person doesn't know what an interview is for. And that's fine. Those people exist in the world. It's not your job to confront them or fight them, but it is a red flag to know that this person has a successful position at this company. And what does that say about the relationship that you want to have with this company? Just another question to ask.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. I've had to go through long, drawn out interviews and screenings, sometimes just to be passed over for the job. How long does it take to know if I'm the right person for the job? So from Harvard Business Review, excessive interviews or a drawn out interview process can be a sign that the team or organization is overly
consensus driven.
Oh, consistent. Okay. You know what? Let's redo that whole thing and have you read it.
Okay. Harvard Business Review says excessive interviews or a drawn out interview process can be a sign that the team or organization is overly consensus driven, indecisive, or has issues driving things to completion. Totally true. That could be one of the things. The other thing, particularly if you're in tech, is that you might have to take tests, right? You might have to pass coding tests or QA tests or demonstrate skills on the job. And we've heard tale of, you know, 10 rounds of interviews because you have to actually demonstrate skills to multiple groups that you're actually doing work with. And that can be incredibly painful. It can also be a weird sign about the state of the organization that they pride themselves on moving quickly, but aren't able to move quickly. And that's like they've given too many people authority into the hiring process, which may be a sign that there are too many people involved in all the processes. It's an inefficient organization. So that can be really frustrating.
So I'm going to actually see, I see it from both point of views.
Of course. Yeah.
Right? Because I think it depends on the job. If you're being interviewed for a high level executive position or high management, your process is going to be longer. Because they're going to be interviewing more people. They are going to, the process is just going to be a longer, more drawn out process because they want to make sure they get the right person for the job. Because from the company's point of view, it costs a lot of money to get the wrong person in the job.
Right.
And so they want to make sure, you know, that they're doing the right thing. I also see this a lot with if you're working through a recruiter. I don't know what it is about recruiting, like if you're working with a recruiting firm, but it seems like those kinds of jobs, if you are they're the middle person, it always seems like it takes a long time. And I don't know if that's because there's a lot of back and forth and you're not directly corresponding with the HR department or whatever, but and that could be for a million reasons. I mean, you know, and so what I'll tell people is that, well, keep in touch with your recruiter. Make sure that you still let them know you're interested in the job. Make sure they tell you if the job has been closed, because I can imagine that sometimes the job closes and the recruiter doesn't go back and tell everybody.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing, too, is to be proactive and you know, get your hands in there as much as you can. But yeah, I mean, if you're, it's just, I guess what I would say is don't, what is it? What's that saying? don't put all your eggs in one basket.
that is definitely a saying.
So, you know, you've interviewed, you're going through the process, but keep looking because you don't want to just wait out for that position because who knows what's going on.
Yeah. And, you know, all of these things, it's a really fine balance, right? Depending, because, you know, when you're talking about, you're a senior level executive position, there are going to be many rounds of influence interviews, right? Do you have, essentially, do you have chemistry with the organization, right? Do your experiences line up? That's pretty easy to suss out. Mm-hmm. But are you a right cultural fit? Well, you got to talk to a lot of people to make that work. I think it's important to recognize that in some organizations, they don't put enough authority, invest enough authority in the recruiting process. And as a result, recruitment offloads responsibility for potentially bad hires to many departments. And that just reduces or absolves each individual department of 100% of the responsibility of hiring somebody that isn't a good fit. And that's problematic, right? It's inefficient, problematic, and it drags you on as somebody who just wants to go to work and contribute.
Right.
And so, like, being able to see that when that is going on might be a red flag that it's not a good fit. You got to really, you know, the balancing is you've got to really ask yourself, is this the company I want to work for? If this is the kind of stuff they're making me jump through, if I'm having the same interview over and over with multiple different groups, just because one group doesn't want responsibility for hiring somebody because they got burned, right? All of these processes come around because someone got burned sometime, right? We know that. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how we build policy. But it's also important to acknowledge that it might not serve you as somebody who's looking for a job. So something to be aware of.
The other thing I want to say, though, just on the other side of that, too, if you do get passed over, I that's hard. And that's going to take a little bit of time to kind of get over the RSD that comes with that, right? Like, that is definitely something to have to deal with. And I know I say this, and it's really easy to say to not take it personally when you really feel like you're taking it personally because it is about you. But there's so many factors that go into hiring someone. And I will tell people, if you didn't get the job, I'm a big believer that it wasn't the right job for you. They saw something that wasn't going to be a good fit. We don't know what that is. We're never going to know what that is. But I just have to believe that that wasn't the right one. And you keep moving on and stay, you know, as positive as you can. Yeah. And you probably learned a lot along the way because you got some, you know, really good experience with interviewing. You probably got really good at talking about you and your experience and, you know, take the good out of that and bring it into the next interview.
Yeah. I've been in interviews where bosses talk poorly or inappropriately about their employees.
Terrible. Yeah. Red flag. Get out of there right away.
That's huge.
Not okay.
It's really lame. And I think it's, I've been in situations where I feel like it's easy to talk poorly about both employees and managers, right? Like, it's so easy when you're in the interview process, you find somebody that you kind of like, and you say, like, here are some things that are kind of frustrating about where we are right now. You know, we're in a lull. Our teams aren't producing. We're hiring because we need somebody to re-energize, right? That level of honesty is a red flag. Hunter International reports if they're talking negatively or giving personal information away about current employees, it's a red flag. Talking poorly about their coworkers can show that the interviewer does not handle private situations correctly, may not respect confidentiality, and that the organization may not have a good culture. Yeah, I can think of no situation in an interview process where it's appropriate to say things, anything like that.
I agree. And it goes, that's the same advice I would say to somebody who is being interviewed. Don't talk about your past employers in a negative way or coworkers in a negative way. Even if you left on the worst of terms, I would still sugarcoat that in a different, you know, light. Because that is a red flag as an interviewer that if you're talking poorly about your other company, and you know, I know that there's things that there's reasons why you're leaving a job, right? So of course there's going to be things that maybe you didn't like and you can be honest, but just don't talk badly. Like, don't talk in a way that, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know what the difference is about talking about your experience, but then not saying that, oh, it's a terrible place to work for. They're terrible. Yeah. They're I don't know. There's a line there.
Well, you can speak about the facts of your experience without coloring it with your emotional experience, right?
Yes, exactly.
You can totally do that. It's okay.
Yeah. And I just want to emphasize how important it is for you to interview them. You know, and again, we talked about this at the beginning, but I just think it's so important, especially when you're feeling stressed and you really need a job. It's really easy to just want to, be whatever they want you to be or what you think they want you to be because you need this job. But it is so important for an ADHDer to really get the facts and as much information as they can around the job, the environment, who they're working with, what a typical day is like, what is the culture, can I observe, can I go in, can you give me a tour of where I would be working? Ask these questions because you want to get a really good sense if this is the right job for you. And I was just talking to my daughter. She's leaving her position as a barista that she's been working for the last couple of years. And I was telling her the same advice. And I'm like, she wants to be a waitress. So she's trying to get a job to be a waitress. And I'm like, just go in and, ask them questions. And we've been going to dinner at the different places that we think she might want to work at.
Have fun.
Yeah. And one of the places we definitely decided that was a no-go. So that was really helpful. So anyway, that's something else. Check out companies. Oh, that was what I was going to say. I just forgot about that. When you're looking for a job, look at the industry that you like, not just the position. Because there might be industries that you're really interested in and you can find, you can find openings that way too. Yeah. Rather than just looking for a customer service job or whatever.
Well, and that's a really good point because I think we often underestimate the complexity and the breadth of the overall job market, right? There are companies out there that are doing something related or that service the company that you're talking to that you may have never even heard existed. Some B2B back-end company that also has great benefits and struggles to hire good people and keeping your options way, way open and going to apply for jobs with companies with brands you've never heard of, right? There are a lot of companies out there that that exist.
Yeah, so, because if you believe in the mission of the company, whether it's selling a product or a service or whatever it might be, that's just you enjoying your job more so than going to a company that you really don't care about.
Yeah.
Either way. Yeah.
It's little things. I worked for a client in Edmonton once, and it was one of those experiences, right? It was a connection from a connection, and I ended up doing some work for this company, and they make stainless steel pipe fittings for railings and kitchen supports and things like that. I don't know who does that work when I'm standing in a kitchen, but now I know, again, I've just done work for them. There's a small company that out of Edmonton, Alberta, that ships internationally and has all kinds of clients that I have heard of, and they're really great. They're really nice people, and they do good work. I never in a million years would have heard of them, that they even exist, had it not been for a connection of a connection of a connection. So keep your options open. We do have red flags on the job, starting with onboarding and starting a new job from our listeners. After a week on the job and just starting to get the hang of things, another new hire started and I was the one management chose to train them. Yeah.
Not a good situation.
I wish this wasn't the first time this was the first time I've heard that, right? Happens so common and it's just one of those things. You just admit, here's where we are, new person. I'm exactly 5 days you're senior. Let's see if we can do this together.
Yeah. And what I've also seen, a different version of this, but very similar, is they get on the job, they're told they're going to be trained, and then they're never trained. Yes. They're just kind of thrown into it and they're never properly trained and they didn't get the onboarding training that they were promised to get. So that's also a huge red flag.
Totally. all of this is bad. Like, I'm not saying, but I'm just saying, like, if it, like it's it, and it's from a management perspective, it's sort of indefensible, right? There should be a program for figuring these things out. And sometimes you deal with what you're handed. From the Washington Post, you'll encounter this type of behavior in any workplace. Oh, I skipped one. It's never a good sign when you're immediately approached by one or more existing coworkers who are overly eager to share office gossip with the new hire. You know, really, what are we saying here? There is a little bit of mean girls in every office, right? Like, there's a little bit. It's, if you haven't seen Mean Girls, it's clicky. It's about clicks, right? It's about, like, you know, we're trying to figure out whose team you're on. New hire.
Right. And
it's
exactly.
Just the social dynamic of work. Washington Post says you'll encounter this type of behavior in any workplace, but when you're the newbie, you should enjoy some sort of honeymoon period free from office politics. If you notice an environment where backstabbing is common, it could be a sign of toxic work culture.
Right.
Yep. Okay. I was hired for a job that technically didn't exist yet. It was for new building that had yet to open. For the first month, I had to drive to another office building an hour away from where I was hired to work. I was sat in a cubicle, and that was it. I was never given a single task or any instruction past, you can sit here. Well, I feel like there's an end to this story at some point. Like, eventually you did something, right? Or did you...
I hope
did
so.
You leave?
That's
did
so
you just
weird.
Leave? Like that feels like the setup to a joke that we don't get the punchline for. That doesn't sound very good, but it also doesn't sound out of the realm of possibility.
No, and it sounds like a lot of disorganization in new hires.
Yes. Yeah, it
with
sounds
the company,
like a disconnect.
A building that doesn't exist yet. Yeah.
Absolutely. And we run into this all the time. You know, my wife does placement for SLPs,
right.
And we would run into this all the time. She'd be complaining about the fact that HR for a school district just sees there's going to be a maternity leave. And so they end up hiring to fill that maternity leave way prematurely. So you end up like double staffing because you hired somebody to take on this job that ended up taking on a maternity leave when the person who was leaving was only like 3 months pregnant, right? It was just
crazy.
A massive disconnect between recruiting and the actual work. That's what it sounds like you're dealing with here. And it's not good. It's definitely a red flag. But I am curious what the end of that story is.
I am too.
Yeah.
And if they stayed there. And what was the job?
Yeah,
like, that's just so interesting to me.
We've got a greatest hits of red flags on the job. Shall we just burn through these?
Yes,
these are
absolutely.
Good. Many of our listeners spoke about not being given clear work expectations or their superiors being unable or unwilling to clarify job tasks or responsibilities. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I had one person tell me that their supervisor said, I have my eyes on you.
Yeah. For
and
what?
And I'm like, what does that even mean?
No. Yeah, that doesn't mean anything. For what?
It's negative.
Yeah.
But what does it mean? Yeah.
Unless it's followed by a wink, in which case there are more problems. Right?
Whole nother set of issues
set of
and red flags.
Neither
there.
One of those red flags is any sort of good.
That's right. Oh, actually, that reminds me of something that I do want to bring up. So when I was talking to my daughter about different restaurants in the area, I said, well, what about the restaurant that I went to for my birthday? And it's a nicer kind of Italian restaurant. And she said, no, because when I was there and I went to the bathroom, the owner kind of grabbed her arm, but did it in like a groping kind of way, like this like kind of sleazy type of way to like say, you know, oh, you should, you know, turn in your resume. And red flag.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, don't go there.
Don't go there.
So that was a red flag. It just dawned on me and I wanted to throw it out there.
Groping is generally a red flag.
Well, and it wasn't groping like in bad areas, but still, like, she was uncomfortable with the arm touch.
It's groping enough. Yeah, no, that's
fine. It was enough that was like, this isn't quite right. Like, I don't know. Yeah. Anyway.
Everything is urgent or an emergency. I tried to explain to management that if everything is labeled urgent, then nothing is urgent. No one seemed to understand that concept. Everyone was always running to put out the next fire. You know, that's a cultural issue. Right.
Yeah.
That's a cultural thing. And it's inherited. Somebody at the top was a real, you know, sucker for urgency. And that became a bit of identity and lost the meaning of it. And that trickles down because it can't help but trickle down until you stare it in the face and say, this is really like what we're really saying is go watch The Incredibles, right? If everybody's special, no one is, right? We learned the lesson.
Right.
We've learned this lesson before. It's not good for you. It's not good for the company. It does not create, I think there is a myth that a company where they treat everything urgent, the myth is that they're going to be more responsive to, you know, to client needs, to customer needs. That's not true. That is just patently not true. It makes the company indecisive and it makes the company chaotic. And a chaotic company does not respond to anything, right? Like it reacts, and that's just feral. It's not
a good environment.
Yeah, not a good enough. I worked at a retail setting with a large hospital network. I was consistently told to look the other way or give special or preferential treatment to VPs or other high profile employees. Okay. A retail setting within a large hospital network. I feel like there is context there that is missing. It is a red flag. Like, it's not generally healthy, but I also have worked in those kinds of situations. And like, you know, I was selling one of my first high school jobs. Like, I was in a tourist situation and, you know, the president of the company would come in, they'd get a Coke and a hot dog. Like, what kind of challenge are we saying? Right. Like, what is the preferential treatment that VPs and presidents are getting that is not appropriate? There is a line. Right. I'm not saying there isn't a line.
Oh, no, I totally agree with you, because I was thinking, like, when I worked in retail, you know, whenever our regional manager would come into the store, you know, boy, we were on our best behavior.
Right.
And catered, you know, whatever you need, we're here for you. So, yeah, I do think it some of that is just going to naturally happen. Looking the other way, I think that, I mean, depending on the context too, I think that like, if you're saying a VP is getting away with something that they shouldn't be getting away with because it's not okay for other like employees or whatever, like they're, I don't know what it could be, you know, then yeah, that is a red flag, because you're also going, I mean, you have to ask yourself ethically, like, is this an ethical, you know, boundary that I'm crossing? So, yeah, I think we would need more information on that, like you said, to kind of...
I just want to underscore, like, I recognize the complexity of organizations. And sometimes the fact that an employee gives a hot dog and a Coke to the president of the company when they come in is recognizing that that we're all sharing a few pennies of that hot dog and a Coke in order to show off a little bit to the executive. And that's... That's a thing that is, you know, your sort of moral fabric has to be able to adapt to in one way or another, whether it's okay or it's not. You get to answer that question. I'm just saying, culturally, a lot of organizations, that is okay. What we're, you know, when I hear this, I think about like Sam Bankman Fried, like look the other way when he's actively an antagonist in his own story, right? These are executives who are taking massive advantage of customers and employees. And that's a very different thing than a hot dog and a Coke. So.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, I can see just the example that I gave about the owner groping. Like, if she worked there and went and said something like, this bothers me, and they're like, oh, it's the owner, you can't, you know, you have to look the other way. That's a red flag.
Yeah.
Get out of there. Yeah, sure. Not okay. So yeah, it all depends on the context and what you're talking about, for sure.
As I was feeling the strain of the job, I would try to take time off to improve my self-care and overall health and well-being, but I was shamed for trying to take days off of work and told I was being selfish. This is such a button for me.
I know, me too.
Such a button for me. And was I talking to you about this? This was an environment where somebody said, we have a policy where a sick day, like you take a sick day, it doesn't matter how long you've been on the job. If you're sick, you go home. And I approached my coworker or my boss, and I said, I need a mental health day. I'm feeling the effects of my depression and bipolar, and I need to take a day off. I am sick, but it's a mental health issue. And they had to litigate that because mental health was not included in any policy around health, right? So this person ended up having to take vacation time for mental health time to heal her brain. That makes me insane. That makes me insane. Right now, we are 20 years too late in solving this problem for our people when these complaints first started coming up. We are way too late in having these conversations about mental health. And it just shows, I mean, that is a massive, massive red flag. And I want to punch something hard. Like, I get so mad at that. So
not a company that cares about you.
Yeah. They don't care about you. If they're still dealing with this, they're done. They've already, that's their signal. And for me, it's pretty black and white. Like, if that becomes an issue, it's like, let's go. We're going to go find someplace else. And maybe they make stainless steel pipe fittings. There was a lot of mention of work-life balance, but management never tried to foster that type of working environment. This is a huge red flag, right?
I agree. Because management needs to be role modeling this so that their employees feel comfortable in doing it. Because if they're not doing it, there's that underlying expectation that you feel that you have to stay there too.
Yeah.
And it's not fair. And I think this kind of goes with the mental health. I feel like if you're really not getting that work-life balance and you're feeling that pressure, like it may not be the right job for you because it's not the environment you thought you were getting into.
And let me tell you a secret. This is a little secret. One of the trends right now in benefits packages that we're seeing a lot of is unlimited time off, right? Mm. It's just it's all PTO, personal time, and it's unlimited. Take whatever you want. That's a red flag, as it turns out, because it's a company that knows you're never going to take it. You're never going to take
it. Because people don't take it when they have it.
Yep. And they know that the peer pressure is too great. They know that any submission for time off is going to be met with some sort of judgment. And that once they do start taking unlimited time off, then they are under increased scrutiny for actually meeting the deliverables of their job. Not decreased, not the same. It's a natural artifact of historical management practices. So I would be super leery because I would say it's a massive trend to see this. It's unlimited time off, and yet very few organizations are really doing the work to understand how to manage employees in an environment of unlimited time off. So that is a little secret.
That's really interesting. Well, and I have something else that just came to mind when you were talking about that. I had a client who had a lot of vacation time and wanted to use it. And so in the summertime when it's not as busy, they agreed that she could take Fridays off. Mm-hmm. But the problem was, and this actually is a good lesson, she felt like she had to put 5 days of work into 4 days because she was taking that Friday off. And so she was really stressed and putting a lot of pressure on herself. But when she talked to her supervisor and some coaching with me, that wasn't the supervisor's expectation.
Right.
So that's also a really good lesson, is that even though we may feel like we have to do 5 days and 4 days, that is not what her supervisor expected at all. She was like, no, this is your vacation day. You do 4 days of work. And you leave for 3 days and then you come back on Monday and you do 4 days of work, and you're going to do this throughout the whole summer.
Right.
You know, so it is important to have that communication and clear expectations, because sometimes it's in your favor.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, this is one of those things where as the employee talking to manager or coworkers, one of my favorite things is, your stress is not my stress, right? Mm-hmm. I recognize I'm gone on Friday and that there is some pressure being put on me to be responsive, even though I'm not here on Friday, because other people's needs other people value their own needs as highly as I value my needs. And they will say, why aren't you there? Why didn't you answer your phone? Why weren't you available? Well, your stress is not my stress. And I have worked out a schedule as such. I'm not working on Friday. Same thing with remote work, right? This whole idea that managers, we're not good at managing remote employees yet. It takes time to figure out how to do this. It takes practice and the expectations. It is amazing how fast we slip into old habits of management, old stereotypes of management when we're challenged with experiences we don't understand, managing teams that are not where we can see them. It takes generations of leadership, not just weeks of leadership, to figure out how that works, or even years. Like, it takes time. Yeah. And so just be aware that everyone is learning. That might be another, not a red flag, but a white flag, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody is learning. We all have to understand that our managers, leaders, they're all learning how to do this at the same time. So we have a couple more. Here we go. There have been many jobs where there have been a lot of employee relationships that created an uncomfortable working environment. Ugh. Yeah. Yeah, that happens a lot. My first job in education, I was working for a team where it was just three of us. It was our manager and then the two of us. And it was me, my peer, was a lovely woman who was very good at her job. And she and our boss were dating and ended up getting married. That was very uncomfortable because their relationship with the work was very different than mine was, and mine was with her, and the expectations I felt were different. I totally resemble that remark. It's hard. Big red flag.
That's loaded because there's a lot of stuff that probably happens with that. Yep. And I can imagine it would be uncomfortable, you know, especially if you know somebody's having an affair or, you know, like you just know more than you want to know.
Yeah, right. I recently left a job where I was being harassed by a colleague. When I reported the behavior, I was just told to stay away from them. I couldn't stay in a job where my legitimate feelings and concerns were brushed off to avoid conflict with another employee.
This makes me mad.
Yeah. Yep. You did the right thing. It's not okay.
Well, and I can tell you, I have a client too, who was being harassed and went to the supervisor. They did an investigation, and the person that was being who was harassing was fired within 3 days.
Yeah.
So there are people that will do the right thing.
Yep.
But then there's a lot of people that don't, and that is unfortunate. It's not okay.
A lot of conservative industries, while they may say they want people to be themselves and authentic at work, the reality is they do not want to change the system and have anyone rock the boat, because also people in power benefit from staying in control, which is why cultural change is hard. Yes. All of that, yes.
And I think the bigger the company is, the harder that is from getting away from.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things you have to decide. Do you want to work for a big company, or do you want to work for a mid-sized company? Do you want to work for a small business, or do you want to go into business yourself? Like, you got to think of those environments, because another client who just got recently laid off from a large company, I mean, they are a number. Yeah. They are a percentage that got laid off. And that's how it is looked at. And it's not fair. It's not right. But that is the culture.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And that is the line, right? Do you want to go for stability of benefits, regularity of pay, fixed locations, you know, the kind of the big company feel? Or do you want to take more risks and maybe not have as great a benefits package and maybe have lower pay, but work for a company where your contribution is felt immediately and often? And and that's the smaller organization. So it's not easy.
It's not. And I was talking to my older son because we were talking about his major and what he wanted to possibly do with it. And having that conversation too around, you know, my biggest hope for both of my children, and I'm sure everybody feels the same way about their own kids too, is you want them to be happy. You want them to be in a job where they're happy and fulfilled and they're making a difference.
Yeah.
And that was what I was telling my son, is that, you know, whatever you choose to do, it's important that you really want to do it. and you enjoy it, because we spend way too much time at work to not like what you're doing.
Right.
And my mother gave me the best advice when I graduated from college. And she said, you know what? A job is just a job. Mm-hmm. If you don't like it, you get a new one. And I've always, you know, really held that close to me when I wasn't happy with my jobs.
And I would just add to that, your collection of skills is your collection of skills, right? How you mm-hmm. choose to package them is not defined by a job title, right?
Absolutely. Oh, Mike, that is so true, because I can tell you, as an HR professional in the past, those job titles are so broad, so generic, so hard to like come up with like yeah. what everybody does. Like, it's just not a fair assessment of who you are or your right. skill set. I'm right. glad you bring that up, because yeah. it's so true.
Useful, I hope useful to some folks. Thank you, everybody, for who contributed to this giant list of red flags. They are all red flags. It's really wonderful to, you know, if for any other reason than to just remind ourselves that we're not alone in seeing the complexities of the work environment tested. And that's what these red flags are. You know, you get to draw the line on which ones you're going to walk away from versus which ones you want to adapt to. So that's it. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for doing this. We appreciate you downloading and listening to the show. Thank you for your time and your attention. Don't forget, if you have something to contribute to the conversation, we're heading over to the Show Talk channel in our Discord server, and you can join us right there by becoming a supporting member at the deluxe level. On behalf of Nikki Kinzer, I'm Pete Wright, and we will see you right back here next week on Taking Control, the ADHD podcast.